Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Polished Woman, only on LA Talk Radio.
The Polished Woman.
Don't you love our jingle? It's amazing. Okay, happy Monday and happy Polished Woman Day to you, all of you ladies. It's been wonderful, wonderful week for us. For some reason this week I'm so relaxed. I don't know why. Even if last week I was a little bit stressed. So before we start our show for today, we have a very important, and I'm so excited with our guest for today. I want to give our word for the day: successorizing. I hope I pronounced this right, Max. Successorizing, the state of being successful while accessorizing. I really don't understand. What is that? Accessorizing what?
Basically, just being accessorized. When you go out in the workforce and you want to be successful, you present yourself in a way to successorize.
Okay. Hey, don't forget, English is my second language. Sometimes, you know, I don't understand the word. You have to explain, Max. Wait, okay. So before I start our show, you know, our show is, this is exciting because this is actually my first time to talk about this. And, you know, because back in my country, as I mentioned to you a while ago, Max, we didn't have this whole racism and discrimination. We have racism towards our own race.
And no bigotry either, really.
And no, yeah, there's none of those because, you know, in the Philippines, we just, I don't know, we just don't care about, you know, who you are. Like, in fact, even when you're a foreigner and you come to the Philippines, you're like a king. Like, whatever, you know, color you are or whatever.
Or a queen.
Yeah, or a queen. It's like nothing. And even if with the whole thing that's happening with the whole LGBTQ. LGBTQ, there's nothing. Like, we don't really care, like, who you are or how you became. Nothing like that. So it's only when I moved to the U.S. that I've heard of the word racism. I swear.
And bigotry.
I don't even know. I ask you today, what is that? I really don't know. So this is like really important. I'm so happy and I'm really looking forward to learn from her. I watched a little bit of her video last night and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm really, really excited. So, yeah. Oh, and don't forget to follow us on Instagram, The Polished Woman, and all social media. It's called The Polished Woman. And of course, our website is right now under construction, but it will be on like in a few weeks. It's going to be so exciting. So I want everyone to take a minute and think about how they would define a good leader. This person is now I don't know how she did it, but she's a good leader. What qualities does, you know, this person have? How educated are they? How many followers do they have? What kind of morals do they have? What, you know, with that idea in mind, I want you to think about if you know anyone who fits that idea. Do you fit into that idea? You yourself. A lot of times we think about leadership. When we think about leadership, we don't immediately think about ourselves because you always question yourself, how can I be a leader? You know, like I did the same thing, you know, when I just started, how can I, you know, how can be a lead? How can a woman with, you know, with English who's a second language can be a leader to amongst these women? Or do we think about it in terms of one area in our lives? For example, maybe you own your own business, or maybe you're in charge of a group of volunteers, or maybe you're a single parent and the head of your household. These are definitely leadership positions, but do they help you see yourself as a leader? Do you want to be a leader in your life right now? Of course, we all want to be a leader. So that's why I invited our special guest, the author of Step Up and Step Up and How to Live with Courage and Become an Everyday Leader. The TED Talk Coming Out of the Closet and her campaign, Hard Equals Hard. Oh my gosh, ladies, please welcome Ash Beckham. Hey, Ash. How are you?
Thank you so much
for accommodating us.
Of course, I'm happy to be here.
You're so cute. You're so beautiful. Oh. Oh my God. I watched you last night. I was like, oh, she's really cute.
Oh, thank you. Well, I've got my, I just got out of the pool. I'm visiting my family in Ohio. So my son and I were just in the pool. So this is my wet out of the pool.
Oh, I saw that, that story of yours about your niece. I love that. I watched that. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. I wanna ask you right now. The first thing I want to know is, how do you define a leader? That's in your book. Yeah.
Right. I think a leader is really anybody who's willing to be an example, right? Who's willing to decide authentically who they are and move forward from that place. I think innately people want to follow people that are authentically themselves. So I don't think you need a title or, you know, a number of direct reports to be a leader. I think it's somebody who's living their life authentically is leading and being an example for people that are kind of looking for that North Star, that way to get started on their path.
Yeah. But how do you, okay. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Tell us about your path first before I want you to ask me a second. Yeah. Tell me about your path. It's exciting. I want people or our ladies, because most of my, you know, our listeners, our viewers and listeners are, you know, moms. Or nowadays, Ash, I'm not kidding. Nowadays, there's a lot of them who are feeling so down, feeling so emotional. And they're just like, okay. And so most, you know, I'm not a leader anymore. I can't do this. They're, you know, they want to, you know, I don't have courage. I want to give up. I want to give up on my marriage. Like, I can't take care of my kids. Like, how, you know, what is your, tell us about your story.
Sure. I mean, I think it's especially now, it's so, it's easy to think that, I mean, you can't think about being a leader when you're just trying to survive, right?
Yes.
When you're just trying to survive mentally, you're trying to keep everybody up. And I feel like I'm not doing well at anything I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm not the mom I want to be. I'm not the spouse I want to be. I'm not the business owner I want to be. Like, I'm average at best at everything I do. And I have anything left in the tank. And I feel like those are the exact times when we need, those are the people that we need to lead, right? The people that are honest, that can,
yes,
that can share that struggle, that, you know, it's not, I don't put on a perfect face and everything is fine. Like, it's really hard right now. And to deny that or think that a leader has to have the strength to get over that, to me is just, isn't realistic and isn't relatable. Like, I don't want to hear stories of people overcoming. I want to hear stories of people that are slogging through it just like I am. And then I think we can kind of commiserate on those struggles and then also see that there's that light at the end of the tunnel that being honest and being true to who we are really, really empowers us to be the leaders that people are looking for.
Wow. That's why this is why we need to step up right now. So how did you get into this whole motivational thing? What made you start doing it? Of course, there's always, like, you know, the beginning.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was living my life in the town that I was living in. I was in Boulder and it's a great spot and pretty progressive. And I thought that just being myself was enough, right? I was, you know, gender nonconforming. I was an out lesbian. Like, that felt really empowered to me. But then friends of mine started having kids and you see these kids and, you know, you grow to love them. It was before I had a son of my own. And you know that they don't know that there's anything wrong with the reality that they have, right? They don't understand gender in a different way. They don't, one mom, two moms, you know, like, that doesn't really, they're inquisitive, but they're not judgmental. Mm-hmm. And knowing that what they embrace really hit me, you know, I felt this need to protect people. And at least in our space, that we needed to educate people. So I did my first talk and it was about not using the word gay in a negative way and kind of the impact that it had. And that just kind of started this journey of speaking. And I was really lucky to get some traction online. And then all of a sudden it was a speaking career and people resonated. And I think it's because, you know, I told these stories that were that were funny that I wasn't the hero of, right? But that there were lessons learned in there. And I think that that really connected with folks. And I think they could, we found commonality. And you know, we're not really that different if we look at it.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy. So this is all for the people from my country. I'm from the Philippines, by the way. English is my second language. And oh, wow. this is for all of them because they listen to us. And, you know, I want to let you know, guys, ladies, that this is one, you know, woman that who's amazing. She's a leader. She's all over. People listen to her. Millions and millions of people listen to you, Ash. And, you know, because I just, before we started the show, I just actually mentioned that back in my country, when I was there, we didn't have problem with this. Like we didn't have the slang words. We didn't have any discrimination and hatred. In fact, when you're like, you know, I like here when I moved here, it's hard for me to say the word gay or, you know what I mean? Or lesbian. In my country,
sure,
we don't have those. It's just your people. You're, you know, and
sure.
I'm surrounded with, it's funny because I was just telling Max today, my gosh, in my country, the gay people are so popular. Like, it's weird. It's really weird. And most of my people in my industry were like, oh, I'm close to them. And so that's why when I moved here, I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that there's so much hatred and, you know, and racism and discrimination and bigotry. It's just, I was really shocked because when I watch your video, I was, you know, in pain, like hearing you, why was it hard for you to come out? You know what I mean?
Right.
Back in my country, there is nothing like that.
It's sure.
I was just like, yeah. So tell us, can you just tell us about your story and, you know, the definition of leadership and what inspired it and coming out?
Right. And I think to me, leadership has to be something that's coming from the inside, right? It's not, you know, something that somebody puts upon you from the outside. For me, when I came out, you know, it kind of wasn't what I was expecting. It was taboo. You know, I grew up in a town that wasn't, I mean, it was progressive to a certain extent, but there weren't a lot of people that were out. So that was harder, not really knowing how friends and family would react. You know, I just feel like there was a lot of challenges around there. But I feel like once for me, it was like the first time it was very in my soul, right? Like there's those things that you just know in a very basic level. And the first time I kissed a woman, everything made sense, right? Like all of a sudden cheesy love songs and rom-coms, you know what I mean? You like, and I had dated men and had dated really great guys that, you know, that I had great relationships with, but there was always something that was missing. Like I just didn't get it. And then all of a sudden that happened and like all the bells and whistles went off and the fireworks and like all, and my first reaction after that was to call anyone that I ever cared for, but who I, you know, maybe didn't get out of the relationship in the best way possible. Cause I just didn't really understand what was going and just apologize. Cause I hadn't known what it was like to have your heart broken, right? And like once you have that, I think you just, you understand humans so much better.
Yeah.
But you understand love.
What gave you the courage to apologize though?
Well, I felt I owed it to people. Like once you know, because that relationship, that first kiss ended, you know, about as gracefully as a train wreck. So it was a terrible way to end a relationship. And I was the heartbroken one in that. And I knew I had unknowingly had inflicted that pain because I don't think I understood the strength and how hard that could be. I think I was pretty cavalier with other people's feelings because it wasn't, I didn't have the reciprocity in that because I just didn't know what it felt like. And then once I knew you just as like a human with a heartbeat to know that you've hurt other people, I think it requires some, you know, and it didn't, some people, you know, didn't really care what I had to say. And some people had moved on, you know, there's a variety of reactions, but it was something that I wasn't doing it for the reaction. I was doing it because I needed to come clean on the unkindness I had had. Cause I just didn't have the reference of what I was doing, you know? And I feel like that's the leadership piece of kind of owning your mistakes and correcting them when you can, but you go through the world, you try to be the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
And by doing that, I think you become a leader. You don't try to be a leader. I think when you're authentic and genuine, that it's something that you embrace. And it could be a leader of of one, right? It could be a leader within your own family, or it could be, you know, a leader in a business sense. Like there's all these different ways to do it. As long as you're owning your own power and making it for good in the world, I think you're being a leader.
Wow, that's amazing. I hope you can, you know, you heard this, ladies. This is amazing. Wait, so you mentioned the word hard. Can you explain to us, this is in your book, and you talk about it, what is hard equals hard?
So to me, that's this idea of we don't know what it's like to walk in somebody else's shoes, right? That's kind of the first pillar is figuring out this empathy. And it's this idea that the hardest thing that you've ever done, I might not be able to relate to, but it's kind of how you have, you know, when you're going to come out of any class, you're going to tell somebody something, like you get that feeling in the pit of your stomach. Like we all know what that feels like, whether that's like telling somebody you want to break up or telling somebody you love them for the first time, right? It's that, like, it's that feeling in the pit of your stomach that you're going to say something that could inevitably change somebody's opinion about you. And you really don't have any control over that, right? And that feeling, it doesn't really matter what you're telling them so much as what it feels like to get ready to tell them. And that's to me, that's the same, right? Like I don't, you know, I would talk to students and I would say, you know, the hardest thing I ever to do was come out to my parents and tell them, not knowing what their response was going to be. And then I'd have and I was like, you know what it feels like, that feeling in your stomach. And a student would come up to me and say, hey, I got a speeding ticket and I didn't want to tell my parents, or I got a C on my exam. Like, are those, you know, it's easy for me to be like, in 10 years, you're not going to think that's a big deal. But in that moment where you are in your worldview, it's a big deal to you. And so if we can relate on that somatic feeling, then I think it doesn't really matter who has it harder. It's that my most challenging thing is just as hard as your most challenging thing. And we can connect on what that is. It's that what happens at the end doesn't really matter.
Sorry. You're making me cry.
Oh, hopefully. Sorry, I'm really happy to.
Sorry, no, Max.
No. It's,
no, I'm sorry. What you're saying.
No, it's
see. Hold on.
Everybody's.
I'm sorry.
Everybody's got stuff. Oh no, it's fine.
Yeah.
Everybody's got stuff, right? And we just don't know. We walk around the world not knowing what that is, and it doesn't serve us as leaders to compare it. To compare it in a negative way. It serves us to connect about what that's about.
Yeah, you're just talking about hard because it. You know, some of my, you know, experiences that I had was, you know, on the show. It's weird that every time I do this show, I always say, I want to be able to help and encourage women and, you know, help them with their emotional, mental, you know, needs and stuff. I always end up being me. I always end up, I'm the one being, you know, because, you know, it's hard moving here. The same thing as you. It's just different, you know, situation. Moving here, I didn't know what was I, you know, I'm like, I'm just a housewife, you know, but I left my career back in the Philippines. I used to host. I did, you know, in my country, when you host a show, it's very Tagalog. And even if I, you know, even if we converse in English, of course, because I've been doing it for years, it's all in Tagalog. So moving here and just, you know, following the path, you know, just where my husband, because my husband is from here. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do here? You know, how am I going to, you know, how will people accept me, be, you know, as English in my, and how to become, you know, how can I become a leader? It's an everyday leader. And so it's just hard, right? And so I was just like, what am I going to do here? It's actually Max who pushed me.
There you go. It all comes back to Max.
To push me. And then talking about this, my dilemma also, I'm sure Max, you know this, that, you know, my daughter, she just doesn't know her. she doesn't know her groove in life. You know, she, just like you, she went on a couple of dates and, you know, maybe just to please us and our family. And until I sat down with her and I said, you know what? I said, I'm surrounded with, you know, gay people in my country and I'm so open, you know, to it and very accepting. And I think it was very hard for her, the whole dialogue on how to open up to us and to open up to her dad, who, you know, who actually how do I say this, adopted her.
Okay.
As her a real daughter. And it was kind of hard for my husband, to be honest, the whole acceptance and everything. But, you know, slowly we're getting, you know, hard equals hard. We're getting there. We're getting there slowly, slowly. But I know it will get there, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think it's the whole, you know, the my in-laws, they're very conservative. Their generation who does not accept the whole thing. And, you know, we are on this new generation that we are more open and more accepting and more loving. You know, we all love, you know, I talk about this. Love everyone, whoever you are. You have to love equals love, right?
Right, absolutely.
I'm sorry, Ash. You made me cry.
Oh, no problem. But I feel like that's the thing. Like, if you can find love, like when you say love equals love, like if you're lucky enough to find it, all you ever want in the world is for anybody else to find it too, right? Like when you find that you're in love with somebody and when you get down to like your core, and I'm sure your husband's the same way, like it's hard and there are these social things and whatever, but when you get down to it, like I know that's what changed my parents was, you know, it was challenging, but they saw me in love with somebody for the first time and everything else kind of became the backstory, like stuff that they would get over or whatever. I just feel like there's something so genuine about that. And that really kind of connects people. And again, it's not, that's the other thing. Like, it's not like you just all of a sudden come out one day, right? Like it's a process you've gone through. And then to go to other people in your life and assume that like, just in that conversation, they're instantly gonna get on board. I mean, you have to undo for some people years and years of thinking and understanding and education. And so you just always want to keep that dialogue going. And it's a process, right? Like your daughter's not going to have this perfect 15-second soundbite to tell her grandparents about, you know, you keep being yourself and you be honest and you're the same person you've always been. And hopefully they eventually come on. But as long as you keep talking, I think you move in the right direction.
Yeah, my gosh, I love you. Oh, no. I love you. You make it so easy, Ash. Okay, so this is from your book, right? I love when you said, I love this one. I love when you said in your first chapter, focus on our common goal of a better world, not our differences. Don't start with politics or policy, start with human connection. I love this. You know, we all have the capacity to be leaders in our own way. We just need to be brave enough to take action, to separate ourselves from the pack and change our own behavior first. For someone, you know, some people, correct me if I'm wrong, some people, or I should say most people have no human connections, right?
Right.
Yeah. You are being judged right away by how you look or how you talk or even how, you know, they know, or how they found out about you from Google, right?
Sure.
You're just being judged right away. So then these people will just automatically have a barrier between you and, you know, and the person. So my understanding from the second phrase is what they don't, you know, don't let this person or whoever judged or questioned who you are to affect who you are and become this passive person, because guess what? You are special. This is what you said. You can be a leader. You have the capacity to become a leader. You are not an alien. And what makes you believe this?
Well, I think that people, a couple of things, when you start to share your personal stories as like, once you're rooted in who you are, right? You understand who you are and what you want to do in the world. And you start to share your personal stories. It's really hard. When I get up and share some of the stories that I've shared in the book in a talk, even people that don't maybe necessarily agree or, you know, don't think they should need diversity inclusion training or whatever their resistance is, I think you can't hear someone's personal story and not be affected, right? And you start to share these stories about, I can't expect everyone, you know, I can't expect CEO to know what it's like to be a lesbian mom, right? Yeah. Like I can't. He shouldn't. I mean, maybe he could, but if I share my story, he can't unknow that experience, right? And and we don't want, especially when we're trying to create these communities, we don't want anybody to have a hard time. We don't want them to face these injustices. You know, it's like, I feel like now when you hear stories of mothers of color talking to their sons about what to do when they get pulled over and how to be treated by the police and how scared they are to just let them go to the playground. Like, that's, I don't have that fear for my son, but you hear that story of somebody else being scared to be who they are or scared of their children to be who they are. And you know, like, there's a part of you that connects to, that you can't unhear those stories. And so I think, to me, that's the basis of human connection, is you need the vulnerability to be judged to kind of transcend that and get to the point of connection. And you're not going to change everybody's lives, but some of these things you just can't flick out of your brain. So I think that's the piece of human connection that's so critical, but it requires leaders to go there, to go to that vulnerable place, right? To not share their successes or the times when they're the hero, but to really share the times where they've stumbled or they've failed or they've been scared or they've experienced embarrassment, right? Like, that's the connective piece.
How do we get leaders to become human and have empathy? Oh, well, I saw this, that, you know, you said that empathy is very different from sympathy and compassion. Can you please explain this?
Yeah, I think that was really fundamental kind of in my understanding of this is you don't, you know, sympathy almost has this pity component a little bit where you're, it's a little bit judgmental. You're a little bit, I feel bad for them, which kind of makes me feel better about myself. And that's, you know, that's not what we're looking for. But empathy is really this ability to understand. You don't have to agree with, you don't have to support, you're not trying to change anybody's mind. You're just hearing what it's like to be somebody else. And again, once you have that compassion and that understanding, there's really not anybody that we can't at least have a conversation with. Like, people didn't, you know, hate is something that's learned. And so they had to have gotten there. These aren't just, you know, arbitrary decisions that people make to be cruel to others, you know, speaking about large swaths of the population. So if we can have those conversations, they got there a certain way. Like, there was some motivating factor in their life that got them to believe what they believe. So how do we get there? You know, is it like a lack of exposure? Is it just stuff that they've been told? Like, where do we get there? And then how do we start to have conversations knowing that they had their path to get to where they are in the same way that we did. And those paths are different. Therefore, the outcomes could be the same, but we understand what it's like to be somebody else. We understand what it's like to feel like you're forgotten by politicians and have somebody that says they're going to bring manufacturing jobs back to the Rust Belt, right? Like, of course you want that. Like, whether believing the validity of that, I think, is a completely different story, but like, of course you want that hope. Of course you want to not lose your home because the plant closes down, right? Like, you can really get there. And that was one of the things that I found, at least, was that, you know, I came to this realization that I had the privilege of making my decisions on who I was going to vote for based on what their stance was on LGBTQ issues, right? I wasn't worried about how their decisions were going to impact, you know, my job. That wasn't part of it. And so we really need to look at what are those motivating factors are that differentiate us, because we're so much closer than talking heads would have us believe, right? Than these kind of extreme ends of the bell curve. Like, that's just not where we all live.
Wow, this is so good. I think the question for the day is, how do you want to become a leader? I think the question of the day is, how do you become, you know, empathetic, right? I think that's
absolutely
this is so amazing. And what does it, okay, there's another one that I want to ask you. What does it mean, keeping our eyes on the prize? What is that prize, Ash?
Well, I feel like now, for me, I think we all determine what that is for us, right? And so that might be, you know, within a work environment, it might be a cohesive team that works together. Yeah. It might be our kids' school environment. It might be our larger community. Like, we have these ideas. And I think that these conversations that we're having to approach somebody with a different opinion, I mean, now, especially in social media, where we get our news from, what we see, what we hear, what's on our feed, is a lot of the same thing. We don't challenge ourselves in that way, right? We don't listen often to news that's, you know, if you listen to NPR, you're probably not listening to Fox, right? You get your news from one area and it reiterates what you think. And I, you know, and we're all guilty of that, but to really dive in and have those conversations, it's not, having conversations with people that think like us. It's having conversations with people that don't think like us that we still need to coexist with. So that's going to be somebody that your kid's going to go to school with. That's going to be somebody on the marketing team. That's going to be somebody who's a vendor or a client of yours, right? That we can have these conversations in a respectful way, mm-hmm. that really moves the conversation forward. And so then our knee-jerk reaction to be defensive, to be judgmental, to kind of take that breath and put our eye on that bigger prize. What do we really want from this interaction or these series of interactions or this relationship?
Yeah.
Can kind of quell some of those initial reactions to respond or bite back or just disengage and walk away because we have this larger goal of a community with a respectful dialogue, right?
Yeah.
That we know that at work, diverse teams come up with more creative solutions, right? They perform better. But you have to have that diversity exist in a respectful way that we can disagree about anything, mm-hmm. but still know that our intentions are clear and honest and authentic.
Wow, this is so good. Wait, okay, someone's asking where can they reach you or where can they watch you? We mentioned a while ago that you're always on TED Talk. So what is your next show or what do you call it? Is it a show or speaking engagement?
Yeah. Well, as everybody knows, it's a wild time for speaking engagements, but there are some that are virtual that are still going. So I work with a couple different conferences, mm-hmm. where that's going to happen. I don't have any. TED is a little bit on hold right now, obviously, with everything going on.
So anything up though for on a Zoom or something? Did they do that?
You know, I don't think they have yet. I know they were going to do their big TED event, and then that was canceled for 20, obviously. And then I'm not sure where they are, mm-hmm. with 21, trying to figure out how to make it all work in the same way. But there's. You know, there's those little pop-up events. So most of the stuff that I have now is either event-specific through conferences that are happening or through organizations that I work with. But I, you know, I'm trying to, Max has pushed me to be more active on social media. So yeah. I'm trying to do that. So, I know, it's the necessary evil, I think. So, I'm trying to do that. I was doing like a kind of weekly recap of the book, but I think we'll do, you know, something more interactive like that through the fall to push out the book a little bit more. But then, you know, how do we practice these traits and these skills in an environment that none of us have ever existed in before? I mean, I think that's a great basis of conversation because you have to lead in a very different way. And now, you know, those decisions that we're making, these lines that we're drawing are becoming life and death lines. And so it's even harder to have those conversations with your neighbor that you think should or should not wear a mask, right? Like everything that's happening is so amplified that it's even empowers people to even greater level to step up from exactly where they are.
Yeah. Well, how did you start your first TED Talk? Like you have like millions of viewers, right, Max?
Yeah.
How did you prepare for that? Just in case, you know, our women are like, okay, I have so much, you know, like how everyone say, I have so much to say. I have to have my own podcast show or I have to have, you know, it's weird because I want to have a podcast show because I want to have, I want to learn from my guests like you, you know, like how did you do it? How did you prepare? And were you like, okay, this is what I want to do. Like, were you on that, you know, already thinking that this is what I'm going to do in the future? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it wasn't, I had done my first talk, which was Ignite, which is like just a little 15 minute, five minutes.
Okay. Yeah.
You have the slides that auto advance. And so that one got traction and it was a challenge. I had like, you know, I was cobbling together all these jobs. I worked at trade shows as a contractor and I had a vegan Indian food cart that went to music festivals and I was waiting tables. I was like doing all these things to have this life that I wanted. And then finally got enough consistency that I could take a breath and really hadn't done anything creative in a long time. And so this talk was the first one. And I saw an Ignite talk and it was this guy that spoke about his ups and downs with weight loss. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, men never do that. Nobody in Boulder does that. And he was just so real and authentic. And like the feeling he evoked in me, I was like, oh, I want to make other people feel that connection and laugh at themselves and have hope and just be real. I was just so inspired by this guy.
Yeah.
And so then I did mine and knew that I would have to, you know, I wasn't going to grandstand. It had to be something I was passionate about. And so that was not using the word gay in a negative way. And then it's a pretty small community in Boulder of speakers. And so kind of the next evolution was TED. And I was lucky enough to get selected. And then you have that moment of like, oh, this is why I really want to do it. And then you get the yes. And then you're like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I'm so out of my league. So I worked with a great speaker coach, Erin Weed, and she really helped me dial it in. I had this idea to be, you know, broader and bigger and diversity and all these different things. And the organizer, Andrew Hyde, who's a great friend of mine and a great TED producer was, he just said, hey, you dance with the one that brought you, like you got here because of your other talk. And it was just being honest about your real life, like really dial into that story. What do you want people to feel? And I think it was what we talked about earlier, that human connection, that we're just not that different. And that my experience is not that different than yours. The semantics around it might be different, but the experience is the same. And so that was it. And so I felt confident about it. It's funny if you watch it, I mean, and TED audiences typically it's such a safety net, right? They just want you to do so well. They're just on the edge of their seat, ready to cheer. Yeah. And I walked out to do my first one and the mic didn't work. So if you ever watch the video, I have a mic on, Beyonce mic on, but then I also have the clicker and then I also have a handheld, which I hadn't prepared for. So I started it and got about 20 seconds into it and had to walk back off and then walk back and then got reintroduced. And so there are all the edits that you don't see, but I feel like I couldn't have had a better, big family to give it to. And that response was really encouraged me to get through it. So I was confident in what I was having to say, but confident that the audience was going to catch me wherever I landed. So I lucked out there.
Wait, how did this change your life though?
Oh, it was, I mean, I was, you know, had done the first talk and was, you know, speaking at school board meetings and going into sixth grade classrooms, and within 2 months was speaking at Harvard for their inaugural LGBTQ conference.
What?
I mean, it was
gosh.
It was overnight. And that, you know, then you have to just, you gotta, I did like the kind of folksy charm, like, oh, I can't believe it's just little old me. But then people expect some expertise. So I had to get a healthy dose of confidence pretty quickly. But after, you know, you get the reactions that I get and people that really connect with that honest story. And it seemed, you know, I just kind of kept doing what I was doing and it worked and people connected to it. And so, I felt lucky to get to do what I do. It feels these are the stories that I've been telling my friends at bars for years. And now I get to stand on the stage in a little bit of a nicer outfit and do the same thing.
That's so good, right? It's all the things that you tell your friends and, you know, people that you care for. And now you're like telling every single one. Now I want this other one that I have to ask you first, Max, before you ask her about leadership. I love this. Valuing what makes us different. In my case, again, it's me, someone who is not born and raised here. It was hard for me to believe in, you know, in the value of myself. And it was Max really, you know, persuaded me. Can you describe about that whole individuality, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's you know,
self-worth. Yeah.
Yeah. I talk about it a little bit in the book is that, you know, everybody says, well, it's, you know, America's land of opportunity and anybody can do anything and blah, whatever. And that doesn't, you know, it works if you fit a type, right? Like, you are a certain color, if you are of a certain socioeconomic group, if you are this, if you are that, sure, you can do whatever you want. But if you diverge from that at all, it's not welcome, right? Like, that's not how we see success, especially in those formative years to me of middle school, high school, college, right? Like I keep having these conversations with friends of mine that have kids that are just like a little bit awkward and you just want to walk up to them and be like, it's going to suck until you're like 26 and then you're going to be so cool, but it's going to be rough.
Yeah.
And that, you know what I mean? And I feel like that's how so many of us that that come into this phase of our lives with confidence is like, you have to trudge through those years of like, nobody's like me. People say special, you know, your mom will tell you how it's nice to be special, but like that doesn't, that is no social currency to have. Like it doesn't feel like it makes sense. Then eventually you believe it because there are those things that separate you out. And if you can really embrace those as strengths, and then also recognize how other people perceive that as a threat, and how you don't play yourself down, but navigate that, to me is where it works. Like we all have these superpowers. Like my lesbianism is one of my superpowers, right? That's how I see it. I didn't for years, but I think once you get your feet under you and you realize that it's good to be different. It's good to be the only one, you know, when you are in an inclusive environment, I feel like that individuality, it takes you a while to get there.
Wow. Just like me, I was different. And hey Ash, it took me I was 40 years old before I literally found my purpose, and not until I'm 50 that I won my award. So ladies, you know, if you're talking to your children or, you know, if for you, it's never, never too late, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What do you want, you know, what do you want your readers or the ladies who are listening to take, you know, to take away from, you know, from your book, like from your book Step Up?
I mean, to me, I would say, especially to the readers, everybody that's listening is a leader right now. Like I wish I had these little like sheriff stars that I could hand out to just like tell people they're a leader. Like I guarantee that there is somebody in your life that looks to you for answers. It looks to you to make that hard but correct decision, right? Like everybody is a leader right now, and you have everything you need to lead from exactly where you are. We can all be better at it, right? We can work on being more empathetic. We can work on recognizing individuality or difference in others as a strength. Like we can always be better at it, but you don't have to do anything to start. We can all start tomorrow. And that was the component of the book was, you know, at the end of every chapter, there's a challenge, which is just a small thing that you can do to change the trajectory. And as we get more, you know, to be just a little bit more empathetic, to be, you know, take a little bit more personal responsibility. And if we can do that in small ways, then we really have the ability to, first of all, connect better, but then also we get that positive feedback, right? These don't have to be these huge leaps into leadership. They're just these small things that we can do every day. And so to me, that's it, to challenge yourself to be a little bit so I guess it would be know that you're already a leader. You have everything you need to lead, and do something every day that makes you uncomfortable in that leadership role. Right?
Wait, what? Really? Do every day that makes you feel uncomfortable?
Just one thing. And that's like having an awkward conversation with the barista at the coffee shop, or calling that mentor that you want to have and starting that conversation, or just one thing. And it doesn't have to be saying, I mean, you know, today, like smiling, pulling down your mask just to smile is, you know, that is like, there are those things that are just, but you know, you change the course a little bit each day. And then the thing you did yesterday that was so scary is something in a week from now that's very comfortable. And then you do something more and more. It's just gradual. It's not scaling a cliff, right? That's why the steps are incremental and achievable, not easy, but achievable. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, ladies, this is so amazing. Hey, remember, you know, when I did this show, 3 years ago, I also cried and I thought that was uncomfortable for me. Like, I wouldn't be able to do this, like be in front of all these women and, you know, being English is my second language and all. So, and now we did it. So I'm sure, you know, Ash's advice, I hope this will, you know, push you to be, you know, to step up and be a good leader. And, you know, you got it, girl, and every day, right?
And I feel like that's the whole point. Like, it makes you seem so real. Like, you're gorgeous. You're perfect. You seem like you have everything together. Your books are perfect behind you. But, like, you still are overcome with emotion. And, like, that, to me, is the perfect demonstration of what it means to be an authentic leader, is that you still have all of those things and you have all these people that look to you, and also you're like a human being, and there are things that that get to you, and that, you know, to edit that out is just disingenuous. And those aren't the leaders that people need right now. Like, we don't need Photoshop leaders. We need real leaders. And you just did exactly that. So kudos to you. You're on the path.
You're so sweet. Oh my God. Okay. Do you have any final advice? But I want to know what's the difference between, I want to know first, what is the difference between being a leader and an everyday leader?
Well, I think, you know, being a leader, somebody can tell you you're a leader, right? Somebody can tell you, have five direct reports. You're the VP of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That's fine. Like, you can be a leader that way. But an everyday leader, I think it's just a practice, right? It's how you interact with everybody. It's not just how you interact with your team at work. It's how you interact with the guy that collects the trash and the person that works at the grocery store.
Ooh, I love
and
that.
The person who's that you hold the door for, right? Like, it becomes an innate part of who you are, a part of your character, is taking all of these things into consideration, right? And knowing that you're constantly improving and get better. So the everyday nature of it is kind of twofold. A, it's something you practice every day, but B, it's that anybody can do it, right? That you don't need to have a degree, you don't need to have a job title, you don't need to have any experience and age, anything to be a leader. We can all do it. It's very simple and average.
Yeah.
And we can all achieve it, I think, is the other component of it.
And that comes with empathy. That's what you're talking about, right? That everyday leader. If you don't have that, if you don't have that empathy and you don't know about how to do it or give it compassion, you can't be an everyday leader.
And that's genuinely, I feel like genuinely talking to somebody and asking them a conversation and having the conversation of like, well, how's your day? And meaning it, right? Like wanting to get the answer, not with, trying to change somebody's mind or but you're actually engaging with other humans. Then we know about the world around us, and then we can just be better participants in it.
My gosh. Okay. My God. Ash, no, we're already done. We have to wrap.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Max, I swear I could talk to her. I could talk to her forever.
Okay.
I have to like visit you guys in Boulder. Max has been like inviting me for the longest time. Yeah, I need to invite you back on the show. When are you writing your second book?
Oh my gosh, I know. It's so funny. You like think of all the things that you forgot. So I'm trying really hard to get through this one. It was kind of with the pandemic and everything, the launch was a little bit soft. So I think we're going to try to hit it again in the fall, but hopefully in 2021, start to move forward with, some of the other, I think integrity is one of the pillars that come to mind that I didn't really, and having that kind of connection and, greater consciousness and all this stuff. I mean, I think there's so much to say and so much is kind of left unsaid and that next level, right? Because we're always improving. So there's always more to do.
Oh my God. Thank you so much, Ash.
Yeah,
thank
I loved
you
it.
So
oh,
much. Love you. Thank you so much.
Love you
oh
too.
My God. Okay. So being a leader is not only about what you know, it's about what you're willing to do.
Are you willing to stand up
for someone? Are you willing to speak out against the crowd? What they're doing is hurtful. Are you willing to be yourself even when it may be easier to follow a trend? Ask yourself these questions and carefully consider your answers. Thank you so much, Ash. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and be an everyday leader. Thank you, Ash. Thank you, Max.
Absolutely.
Thank you, LA Talk Radio.
Love you.
Give love to the next person that you see after watching and listening to our show. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Yay. Bye.
Through faith I found love. With love I found home. The polished woman.